Episode 172, BulaNetwork.com. Addition by subtraction. Yeah, it's possible. You know it's possible, and we're going to talk about it next.
Till the sun went down, he always put himself in front of everyone. Never thought that he was living in vain, until one day he realized it was gone. Lost control like a runaway train. Run, 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 run away. Never gonna get there, going that way.
Hey kids, welcome back inside the studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at BulaNetwork.com. Coming to you from North Central Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth, to be specific, where today, as I hit the record button, 82 degrees. Man. But you know, it's been hot back in the Northeast. It's just, man, I'm afraid it's going to be a really long, hot summer. But you never know. I've got a new project underway that I will tell you about. You may or may not be interested, and if you're not, then that's okay. I'm not going to spend too much time here. Loghomeradio.com. Loghomeradio.com. I only bring it up because I was in a conversation earlier today with a gentleman in the UP, that is Upper Peninsula, of Michigan. He said he had 2 feet of snow on his deck. Temperature was in the 30s. And I said, well, it's going to be 82 here. Very different. I would absolutely freeze to death in the UP of Michigan. But some beautiful country up there. I've only seen photographs. I've been to Michigan a number of times, but I've never been to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but some really beautiful country. A guy like me would have to, I'd have to pick the time of year that I went up there. But I was going to do a Inside the Yellow Studio, which is my weekly video. And I'd actually done this last week. I released those Sunday afternoon about 5 o'clock. They go out via email and they are only to the subscribers of the newsletter. You're not a subscriber. Oh, you should be. You should be. I one email a week. I don't blitz your inbox, and no, I don't spam you. And, you know, I don't even market to people. People ask me all the time. I mean, you what are you selling? And I'm not selling anything. I'm giving away. That's what I'm doing. I'm giving away expertise and my experiences. So I would encourage you, click subscribe and you'll get on the list, as they say, and I'll make sure that you get these. But I had hit record and recorded this video. It came out fine. And I don't know, something happened in the conversion process. I was uploading it and I'll upload these to YouTube or to Vimeo. Now they're private, so I don't have them appearing visibly to the whole worldwide web, but it hung up and it kept adding on minutes that it would take for it to upload. And I thought, well, something's got to be wrong with this file. But I would play the file, and I could play the file through QuickTime. I could play it in iMovie and it played fine. So I'm like, okay, something's happened to this thing. It was about half an hour long. I tried 3 separate times to do it. And so I thought, well, okay, forget that. So then I thought, well, I'll take the video file and I'll extract the audio from it. Right? Not a difficult thing. And I had the exact same problem. Anytime I tried to convert the movie file to an MP3, it would get to a certain point and then it would just hang. So something in the file was corrupt and making it, but again, I would go back to iMovie or I would go into QuickTime and it would play just fine. I'd never encountered anything like that. Have you? If you have, I'd email me. I'd love to hear your experience and what you did to correct it. So I go to the gym. I'm frustrated, right? So I go to the gym and I work out and I get done and I'm sitting here with my iPhone checking to see if I missed anything while I'm working out. And I'm in the parking lot and I'm thinking, I'll just record a quick video here with my iPhone. And I'll make it a real abbreviated version. So I do a little test recording. Yep. Okay. Everything works fine. Hit record, hold the phone up like on my rearview mirror. That's how I do it. And go on, talk, turn the phone over, hit stop. And it was about 15 minutes long. I got the first 6 minutes. First 6 minutes, and after that, nothing. Who knows what happened? Okay, so by now I'm like, okay, I'm out. Forget it. I just give up. So I did. So this was the first week since I've started the newsletter that I did not have a video. It was just a text email. And I explained to people I'm clearly not the commander of my own domain. My domain being here inside the Yellow Studio. So I decided, well, I'll just make it a podcast episode then. I'll table this thing for a few days and get over it. So here we are. This has been on my mind for a couple of weeks. I can't tell you exactly why, but I can tell you that because all of this happened on Saturday, last Saturday, is when I was trying to do this recording, because on Friday night, this had all been on my mind and I was thinking about this and I was thinking about, it started with a thought about focus. And so much of focus is really a derivative of not only what can you pay attention to, but what can you eliminate? Think about racehorses. Now we're coming up. It's going to be, you know, Triple Crown season, right? Thoroughbred horse racing and all that. And you will see occasionally, if you watch any of these horse races, and of course I watch the Triple Crown and that's it. They'll put blinders on some horses. And of course we all know why they do that. They do that so the horse won't be distracted. So the horse is you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that vision, man, it's one of those days when the brain and the mouth just do not work they're not in sync. Well, those blinders help the horse focus by helping the horse not see certain things. And that kind of morphed into this whole addition by subtraction, which is a phrase that is common for many of us. Friday night, my wife and I are fixing to watch something on the DVR and ABC's 2020 news television show comes on. And the story was a 42-year-old mother. She had a middle school age son. She was seeing him exhibit behavior that was very reminiscent to the way she remembers life being for her as a middle schooler. And it pained her to see him struggle, and so she takes him, and he is diagnosed with ADHD, which is attention deficit coupled with hyperactivity. Yeah, as though attention deficit isn't, you know, that's not enough. You also need to have this hyperactivity component added to it. And shut your mouth. Here she is at 42, and she was diagnosed with it as well. And it immediately made certain things explainable for her. And you've heard stories like this before. Now, I don't care where you fall on the debate of ADHD. Yes, I tend to believe that so many kids especially are medicated unnecessarily so. Yeah, that's a generalization and I know it, but yeah, I don't know. There's so many times that I look and I just think, well, they're kids. Yeah, of course they're bouncing off the wall. They're kids. we all bounced off the wall as kids and nobody diagnosed us. And I didn't have a bunch of buddies on Ritalin or anything, but I'm not saying that some of them shouldn't have been, but I don't know. It does speak to the value that we place on focus and concentration and the ability to do that. But come on, who among us has not misplaced car keys? Who among us hasn't forgotten something? Who among us hasn't read a paragraph out of a book only to realize just after we have finished reading the paragraph, we have no idea what we just read? Who among us hasn't sat down and had conversation and somebody has said things to us, maybe asked us questions, and we've answered them only to realize we have no idea what anybody just said? I know I'm not alone. Part of focus and part of concentration is eliminating these distractions. It's these blinders on. And I recalled hearing or reading, this has been a long, long time ago. I'd love to give attribution to somebody, but I can't remember where I heard this. This is not an original thought, though. That's the main point. I want to make sure I'm not plagiarizing here. I am not a chess player. I understand enough about the game of chess that I know, well, I think I know how the pieces move. My son plays, and he can hold his own. He's no master or anything. But knowing how the pieces might move does not mean that I have any grasp at all on the strategy of chess. I don't. I could not illustrate for you or explain to you a single strategy of chess. But I do know this, and this is what I had recalled hearing or reading years and years and years ago. You cannot win at the game of chess if your objective is to hang on to all of your pieces. Now, I knew enough about it at the time that resonated with me. And I thought, well, yes, that's, in fact, I thought it was brilliant at the time. I still think it's quite brilliant. You cannot win at the game of chess if your objective is, I'm going to hang on to every piece that I have. Well, that same Friday night, Shark Tank had been on earlier in the evening. Yeah, come on, you admit, you know it's a guilty pleasure. You watch Shark Tank. I don't watch it faithfully, but I did happen to watch this one. And a gentleman comes in. He has a water bottle. It has a hard shell, but on one side, it's kind of rubberized where you can actually squeeze that part of the bottle. Now, it also had a filter. There was nothing proprietary about the filter. The filter that it had was a regular carbon-based filter that is common among a lot of different manufacturers. So again, nothing proprietary about that. But the guy who came and made the pitch introduced himself as an industrial design engineer. And he went on and on about the filtration and how because you could squeeze the water bottle, the flow out of the bottle was substantially greater than the traditional hard-cased or hard-shell water bottles that you can't squeeze. You have to suck the water out of them. Well, you can't suck the water as fast as you can squeeze the water out. And as a result, he argued that the filtration of his bottle was significantly better, even using the same filter. Well, that seemed to be his pitch. One of the first questions that was asked, and his pitch, by the way, was very convoluted. In fact, many of the sharks said that it was the most convoluted pitch they had heard, period. And it was. It was bad. But the first question that was asked was, well, who's your market? Do you see your market as being the domestic U.S. sports market? Or do you see it as being third world countries where clean water is a premium? He quickly said the U.S. sports market. That was his market. One by one, the Sharks tapped out and said, you know, the space is way too competitive. He had some sales, but they were all direct and online. He had no distribution. He was not in any major he wasn't in any retail at all, much less major. And so one by one, they tapped out and they were out. Now we get to Damon, and Damon, he wanted $300,000 for a 10% stake in the company. Damon engaged him in some conversation that was odd to me that he was even interested, but he offered $300,000 for a 40% stake in the company with one provision, and that was, we've got to be in a big box retailer. We get in a big box retailer, I'll give you $300,000 for 40% of the company. He wanted to hear what Mark Cuban had to say, and Mark Cuban said, no, I want to hear what you're going to say, you know, to Damon. And Mark Cuban made what I thought was an astute observation, because Cuban, all through the presentation, Cuban was saying, this is a killer bottle. I mean, the bottle is killer. This is the best looking water bottle, you know, I've seen, on and on and on. And Cuban said, I think you need to lose the filter. I think you need to hang your hat on the fact this is the sexiest water bottle out there, and you need to run with your strength and forget the filter, because it's not, you've got no proprietary technology. It's nothing that you own, and nobody cares. He argued, and most of all of them agreed, that, you know, the average person is willing to just take their water bottle and fill it up with tap water. Filtration's not that important to most people in that space. Man, you could see it. The guy, he recoiled, and he continued to pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch this filter, which was the least distinct thing that he had. Well, he wanted to call. He had a professor at Cornell or somewhere that he was close to, and he wanted to step out and make the phone call, made the phone call, came back, and negotiate a little bit with Damon. And I thought Damon was going to pull out and say, nah, I'm done, dude. But he ended up agreeing. He ended up taking Damon's deal. And he, of course, he did what many entrepreneurs do. He so believed in his idea and the way he had it configured originally, you know, he barked out and, you know, you're all going to regret it and yada, yada, yada. I doubt it. It spoke to me about this very topic, though, and how difficult it was as I was watching this unfold, how difficult it was for him to even entertain the thought that Cuban could be right, and that if he would subtract the filter and focus on the design of the water bottle, then he would really have a unique position. He couldn't see it. He just couldn't see it. Maybe better yet, he wanted to win the game of chess by hanging on to all of his men. Every piece that he had on his side of the chessboard, he wanted to maintain those and still win the game. And you can't do it. You can't do it. You necessarily have got to sacrifice some pieces on the chessboard so that you can protect your most prized piece, the king. Well, I think there's a lesson for us. I think the lesson is for us to learn addition by subtraction, that, and I have learned this the hard way. I've learned this firsthand. Because when your background is like mine and so many other people that I know who are like me, when you have been running businesses for years and years and years, well, in my case for decades, and 1 week you're up to your ears in HR stuff, the next week you may be up to your ears in inventory merchandising stuff, and yet another time it's about marketing and sales, and another time it's about operations, and another time it may be about legal or real estate or leasing. You realize that over time, this jack of all trades certainly applies. And it's not so much that you're a jack of all trades and a master of none. You're a jack of all trades and you're a master of many of them. And it is one of the addicting things about, well, what I call small business. And I don't mean small business in terms of revenue. I mean small business in terms of a flat organization. Small business in the sense that when you're at the helm of a flat organization, what I've just described, well, that's you. That's your life. You know, you don't have a VP of real estate. You don't have a VP of human resources. You don't have a VP of merchandising. You don't have a VP of operations. You may have a VP or two, but your hands in everything. And that's very typical of businesses. It's very typical of many businesses that I know that are, you know, as high as $50, $60 million a year, which is still small business, really. No, it's not small, rinky-dink, solopreneur, home-based kind of business. It's bigger than that, but it's still a small business. So when that's your background, as it is mine, and then you're, okay, now here we are, and now what are you going to do? That's, you really have to learn to subtract some things. You've got to really learn, well, okay, I know this, I know that, I know the other. The problem is you can't focus on this, that, and the other and make a go of it. You've got to focus on something. You've got to concentrate. Like the entrepreneur with the water bottle, sacrifice the filter because it's your least competitive thing, but in his mind, it was his most competitive thing, and it really wasn't. He didn't design it. What he did design was the water bottle, and the fact that you could squeeze the bottle and make more water flow through it and make the filter more effective, okay, offer it. But you can sell the water bottle, and if somebody doesn't want the filter, don't force it on them. Market the bottle. The bottle is your unique design. The bottle is your king. Sacrifice these pawns and these other, you know, lower level value assets to protect your king. He couldn't see it. So many of us, we can't see it either. And we struggle to see the thing. And I know what goes on. I know what goes on psychologically is we don't want to limit ourselves. And we think by limiting ourselves, we're necessarily going to be robbing ourselves of opportunity, when in reality, just the opposite is true. Just the opposite is true. By focusing on something, by adding, by subtracting these other things, by going all in on the water bottle, you can now make a name for yourself and you can give yourself a better shot at success. But we are so tempted. We want to look at this, that, and the other, and that's our business. Oh, what's your business? My business is this, that, and the other. But it doesn't work. Instead, we should say, my business is this. Well, what about that and the other? No, my business is not that and the other. My business is this. Okay. Easy. I saw somebody tweet, and you see stuff like this pretty regularly. In fact, I think it was Jonathan Fields who tweeted something, a question, you know, can you succinctly in a single sentence identify who you serve? And some of the responses that he got back were pretty interesting. And it's funny. So many people, they can do it in a single sentence, but it's a sentence that's a paragraph long and it's full of verbiage that I do understand and read English. And these are English words. I know they're English words, but I have no idea what they're saying. You know, we want to sound more highfalutin than we really are. It's a problem. It's a psychological problem. Everybody is tempted to be this, that, and the other. We want to be the end all be all. I've had countless conversations through the years with people, particularly about streams of revenue. And this is where it really rears its head. And I was reminded of a decision that I made back in 1999. I was running a retail company. The business was focused on high-end consumer electronics, think flat panel TVs, and high-end major home appliances, think built-in Sub-Zero refrigerators, Viking ranges, and all that kind of stuff. And as I had been looking at the business in 1999, and I'd spent an inordinate amount of time at the Dallas Morning News in their research department, because, well, when you live in a market this size, big media, they've got databases and they've got demographic information to die for. And I knew that. So I spent a lot of time looking at this and analyzing our sales and analyzing our customer base. And just take a category like dishwashers. I knew that our average sale of a dishwasher was about $800, way above the industry average, by the way. You know, because you can get a dishwasher for $199, $299, and there's a ton of those that are sold. Well, I don't have to tell you that the low end of any market is probably not the ideal place to be. Yes, Walmart has made it work, but we're not going to out Walmart. So I'd been looking at this and felt like it was time to take the company in a slightly different direction, and albeit a bold direction. And the decision, after about a year to 18 months of strategizing and researching and planning, the decision that I made was this. We're not going to be all things to all people, because we can't be. So the person who comes in looking for the $299 dishwasher, we're not going to be the place to come. Now, we might have carried a $299 dishwasher or two, but it really wasn't our business. But okay, yes, we had it. And prior to this decision, I'd pretty much viewed it as a convenience factor. So if we've got a high-end customer, guess what? They might have rental property. And we've sold and done business with them, and we've outfitted their kitchen, but their rental property, they don't want to spend $800 on a dishwasher. They want to spend $200-$300. So we would have a model or two. I decided it was time to say no to that business. I was fully convinced that it was a better strategy to say, it's not who we are, we don't have it. Here's where you can go and get it. Now, people could have raised an eyebrow and said, but what about that revenue stream? My decision was because, well, in Dallas, Texas, retail space is a premium. It's a premium. You're going to pay big money per square foot for ideal retail space. That space has a value, and you got to get return on that value. And I'm sorry, a $299 dishwasher just doesn't cut it. Additionally, I knew that by saying no to certain models and particularly certain mainstream vendors, that I would be forcing the business more toward higher end vendors, greater participation, greater support, more favorable terms and conditions, and all of that. And so I was willing to say no by cutting off some revenue streams in hopes that I could make the more profitable revenue stream bigger. And it worked. It might not have worked, but it worked. And of course, I remember at the time telling people who were people inside the company who were somewhat critical of the decision until they saw that it was going to pan out. Listen, if this doesn't work, it's not like we're wearing concrete shoes here and we can't morph and adapt. If it doesn't work, okay, you know, we fix it. But it did work. By saying no to some things, by subtracting some things, we were able to grow and become more profitable. I'm going to argue that if you will apply that logic to your business, whatever your offerings are, if you will apply that same logic, that it can work for you too. That you can grow your business by subtracting, especially when we're talking about less profitable things or things that are less meaningful, perhaps, to your core business. Addition by subtraction. Focus and concentrate and get blinders on, and don't try to be this, that, and the other. Pick one. Be this, or be that, or be the other. But you don't have to be all three. Don't try to be all three. I remember having an argument with somebody who talked about, you know, some of the most wealthy people that they knew and how, oh man, he's into this and he's into that and he's into this other thing. And I said, yeah, but how long's he been in this, that, and the other? He made his claim to fame by being this. It was only after he established himself in that particular niche that he had opportunities to branch out. I don't know anybody personally firsthand who achieved great wealth by being diversified. I do know many outrageously successfully financially successful people who are diversified, but they diversified after they became known in a certain space, in a certain industry. I think too many times we think that one happened because of the other. That is, we think that because of these multiple streams of revenue and because they were all things to all people, that that's why they made their wealth. No, it's chicken and egg stuff. They got their wealth. Their wealth afforded them to diversify after the fact. I think we incorrectly attach a cause and effect there that, frankly, I think is fictitious. It doesn't exist. So don't fool yourself into believing that you can win the chess game by protecting all the pieces on your part of the board. You can't. You're going to have to sacrifice some pieces because you've got one piece that stands taller than all the rest, and it's the most valuable piece. Go all in and use everything at your disposal to protect that and to make a go of that. You know I'm right. Come on. As Richard Pryor said, you don't get to be old being no fool. Well, you can, but you can just be an old fool. But hopefully I'm not learning to be an old fool. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your attention. I do hope you'll subscribe, by the way. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast, and I would love it if you would leave me a review. Others have. Some good. Okay. Not all of them, but that's okay. It's a free country. You're free to speak your mind and say what you want. Your time and attention are valuable. I know that. I value them myself, and I thank you for giving me your time. The website is Bula. Bula is a Fiji term, by the way. B-U-L-A. It means life. In particular, it means life is good. It's analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. It means both hello and goodbye. No, I'm not from Fiji. Never been to Fiji. But I fell in love with the term over 35 years ago and began to use it in internal memos as a greeting. So years ago when I named the company, it just seemed fitting that it would be Bula Network. Not a network in a broadcast traditional sense. It's kind of morphed into that, by the way. But more of a network of services and things. So anyway, that's my story. BulaNetwork.com. B-U-L-A Network.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. This is the Yellow Studio.